It's time to change the world. It's time for something better. We're telling the stories of people who are changing the world and how you can help. Our daily actions have a massive impact. So what will we do about it? We can remake the world. Because guess what? We can. Hi, everyone. I'm Nathan Gardner, and this is We Can Remake the World, a podcast about people who are changing the world and how you can help. Welcome to part two of our conversation with Tamara Arenovich, head of media and communications for the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. If you missed part one 2 weeks ago, we would definitely recommend listening prior to jumping into today's part two episode, where we'll dig deeper into how Sea Shepherd is protecting global oceans and marine ecosystems, why that matters so much, and what all of us can do to be part of healing our oceans and our planet. Thanks for being here with us. Let's get back to our conversation with Tamara. One question I wanted to ask Tamara was just, I didn't realize how prevalent IUU fishing is, this problem of illegal fishing and this lack of transparency and oversight, which I guess makes sense if you think about it out on the open ocean, but it's a huge problem. And I just wanted to ask you to speak about, you know, what's going on out there? Why is this such a problem? And how does Sea Shepherd play a role in managing it and controlling it?
Well, it's a good question. It is an enormous issue, and it's one that hasn't received the attention that perhaps it deserves. Our oceans, of course, are incredibly important to the well-being of our entire planet and the survival of all species, including ourselves. And protecting our oceans is essential to, you know, protecting our planet and ultimately our future as well, too. The oceans, of course, are responsible for over 50% of the oxygen we breathe. They are home to a vast array of marine animals that that thrive in a very delicate ecosystem and ultimately help to mitigate climate change, provide our oxygen, and so forth. So I can't really overstate rather how important it is to protect the oceans. But our ocean is in trouble right now, and there's a number of threats that are really threatening the ocean's ability to do its job. One of them being climate change, another one being plastic pollution, a third one being illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. These are just a few of the many threats that our ocean is currently facing. And they're not entirely independent either, for that matter. So there's definitely an interplay between those. As far as IUU fishing goes, this is an enormous problem that spans, you know, like all corners of the oceans, and the most delicate and rich ecosystems are particularly vulnerable. So IUU fishing is an enormous threat that faces our oceans, and it's largely because of overfishing and irresponsible fishing practices. Over 2.7 trillion fish are caught every year, which corresponds to, which is up to 5 million fish every minute. So I can't really grasp numbers of that magnitude in my own mind. I don't know that any of us can. But essentially, it's a volume that is not sustainable, which is why we are seeing so many species being pushed to the brink of extinction right now, which is why we're losing so many species right now, which is why we have a staggering number of species on the IUCN red list that are threatened with extinction at the moment. This, of course, also interferes with the delicate balance of the oceanic ecosystems, which, you know, every species that exists in the ocean exists there for a reason and plays an important role in ensuring the health of our world's oceans. An alarming number of species are endangered right now. I can tell you that of those fishing nets that are being put into the sea, studies estimate that approximately 40% of all marine wildlife that is caught as bycatch, which is not the intended species that's being targeted, but rather accidental catch of other species that it can include things like sharks, dolphins, whales, sea turtles that are caught purely accidentally and often lose their lives in the process. And we're seeing the results of that right now. Over 100 million sharks are killed every year, either intentionally or unintentionally. That is up to 30,000 sharks being killed every hour. Six sharks six sharks are killed every second. So gives you a sense, just, you know, this is an animal that a lot of people have a hard time empathizing with. It doesn't have the best PR team and many people are frightened of sharks, but for scale, you know, on average, 10 people are killed in shark attacks every year, and which is often a case of mistaken identity and also sharks being forced to go into waters where humans exist because their food sources have been depleted due to overfishing and illegal fishing. So we're really seeing a crisis situation where some of these most iconic animals, you know, that are just like the hammerhead shark, for example, is critically endangered now. Their populations have declined by 80 to 99% in the last two decades. Shark populations are going extinct because of us. And it's not just sharks. Bluefin tuna, for example, only 3% of bluefin tuna populations remain now. This is an endangered animal that sells for exorbitantly high prices due to human demand. Six out of the seven species of sea turtles that exist are currently threatened with extinction. The seventh isn't necessarily getting a free pass either. It's just data deficient. We actually don't have enough information to assess how many there actually are out there. So this, you can get a sense of the scope of this problem. It's an enormous problem. And part of the problem, I think, is that the sheer volume of the ocean makes it really difficult or impossible, even with political will, to monitor all of these areas simultaneously and take out the bad actors. Now, we at Sea Shepherd have had a great deal of success and continue to work closely with governments in key areas. You know, these are national waters where laws exist to protect marine life, to protect the ecosystems, but often it's a matter of resources in order to be able to actually properly enforce those laws. So we work with a number of governments around the world in some of the richest, most biodiverse ecosystems to help them to enforce existing laws, to identify these bad actors and get them out of the water for good. Another key component in addressing this problem is the establishment and maintenance of marine protected areas. So these are areas in which ideally no fishing at all is allowed and limited traffic is allowed. These rich biodiverse areas allow marine life the opportunity to recover, you know, to just rest, relax, breed, populations to grow and expand. I've had the privilege to be in a few of these amazing areas and to dive under their waters, and it's breathtaking. It brought tears to my eyes. It's what the oceans were always supposed to look like, and it's what they once looked like. And the beauty of this is by protecting these areas, not only are we protecting and enhancing the health of these areas, but as populations grow and thrive, they will expand outside of the protected regions, enhancing the health of the oceans at large. So it really is important that we protect these areas, that we establish more protected areas that are aligned with the actual natural behavior of marine wildlife. So migratory species, for example, such as sharks and whales, it's great to protect them in these areas where they're known to frequent, but if they're not protected throughout their migratory journeys, you know, whether they're caught legally or otherwise outside of those zones, you know, it's somewhat all for nothing. So there's a lot of work to be done there. We have a lot of great partnerships and we're proud of many of the victories that we've had in that area, but there is so much more to do for our clients, which are ultimately the sharks and the turtles and the whales. And this is who we're accountable to at the end of the day.
Yeah, something you said just sparked an idea for me that I hadn't had, which is it's almost like if we're trying to protect the elephant in a very at-risk area from, I know poaching's not as much of a problem these days, but just from many of the human threats that are involved, we say, okay, this little square area of, you know, 50 kilometers squared, the elephants are protected, but anywhere else, all bets are off. You know, that's exactly. Kind of almost what we're doing with the marine protected areas are a wonderful initiative. It's something we must do and we must continue to grow them. But you make such a good point that these animals they don't know what the boundary of a marine protected area is. They're following their own natural patterns. And, you know, it really takes an organization like Sea Shepherd or governments who have the resources to stand up and actually protect these creatures because, you know, as we've seen, illegal fishing will just undermine any effort we take otherwise.
That's exactly it. I mean, borders are inherently artificial, aren't they? And a shark or a fish doesn't know the difference between, you know, this bit of water and that bit of water that's on the other side of the border. Nor does an elephant, you know. So it's absolutely essential that we continue to expand those protections beyond those borders. But as you say, it's a good and it's a necessary first step. Another thing that we do is work with a number of scientific collaborators who are monitoring and maintaining data on the health of these areas as well, too, which is important because it provides the actual facts and figures to establish how effective these regulations and policies actually are. And if we can demonstrate that they're effective, you know, this allows, I guess, the ammunition needed to maintain those protections and to potentially expand them in a way that is more naturalistic and that helps the animals that use those areas.
Yeah. There's another question that I want to ask you, and I don't know, I'd just be curious to hear a reaction. Why is an organization like Sea Shepherd necessary in this world? Like, why aren't governments or enforcing bodies or United Nations group or something? Why isn't somebody doing a better job of enforcing the protections that are in existence or the historical agreements that have been made, that even territorial waters, I know in my research to prepare to speak with you, are being violated? Like, why is it so easy for these actors, these vessels, to carry out illegal fishing operations, other than the sort of difficulty in oversight and you know, enforcement just from the sheer size of the ocean? You know, is it a lack of will, do you think? Or is it, why do you think an organization like Sea Shepherd is so crucial to enforce these laws? You know, why isn't someone else doing a better job of doing it so that people didn't have to take it into their own hands, in a sense, which I'm so glad they did. And Sea Shepherd is doing incredible work, but it's like Sea Shepherd should have all the help out there.
You know, Nathan, why are activists necessary? Why, you know, why isn't the government solving all of the world's problems? I don't have an answer to that question, but I do know that having additional voices and additional resources out there raising awareness and saying that this is not okay and we need to do more, that is inherently how progress happens, you know? Women's rights, human rights, animal rights, environmental protections, every one of us plays a role in standing up and saying that this is not okay, the status quo must change, and also putting pressure on our respective governments to take these issues seriously.
Yeah, no, I got chills. It's the perfect answer, I think, you know, and I'm so glad that Sea Shepherd is out there, not just standing physically between these illegal vessels and their, you know, illegal activities, but also just using media as a tool and getting involved with as many documentaries and you know, as many media resources as possible. I think the organization has been so smart and so effective at that, just to raise awareness and bring people into the conversation where there is so little visibility and oversight. And I'm just so glad that Sea Shepherd is out there. I think a lot of people feel that way.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again too, you know, it's my personal take, but I really, in spite of it all, do believe that people are inherently good. And I don't think that there's anything particularly special about me other than that I've had the privilege to be out there on the front lines on numerous occasions and experience the best and the worst of humanity. I really truly believe that anybody else having had these opportunities would make the same decisions that I have. You know, the vaquita, for example, this obscure little animal in some tiny little pocket of water in Mexico seems so far away, and it's something that realistically most people will never see in their lifetime. So theoretically it would be nice to protect it, but it just doesn't seem real on some level. But I can assure you it's real. I've been there, I've seen them, you know, and as, you know, a crew member and as media on board, I just can't emphasize the importance of that enough. I truly do wish that I could bring every single person on board so that they could see this firsthand. And I think that the world we live in would be a very different place. And I think the conversation we're having would be a very different conversation. It's not possible to do that, but Captain Paul Watson, our founder, has always recognized the power of the camera. It is our most powerful weapon. We do our best to take you there because I think, given armed with the facts, the visuals, the information, people ultimately will make the right choices.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think so many people just don't know. They just don't have insight. They're not exposed to the facts. The sort of mainstream media doesn't always do such a great job of highlighting these stories on any kind of consistent basis, putting voices like Captain Paul Watson or other representatives of Sea Shepherd in the forefront to alert people to the urgency of this, the volume of life being taken out of the ocean and the jeopardy that we're all in as a global community because of that. And yeah, I think you're right. I think if more people knew, change would happen much more quickly, which is why, you know, we do this show. It's why I think Sea Shepherd has made a point to get involved with all the different documentaries and all the ways that it can to spread the word and invite people to the conversation so that they can make an informed choice. And would you speak maybe just about any examples of past successes that Sea Shepherd has had? I know we've spoken about several ongoing campaigns that are super important and a lot of current partnerships that I think are bearing a lot of fruit. But I'd love to hear just any campaigns that jump out at you as far as, you know, really clear successes where Sea Shepherd has been able to really, you know, make a true difference by doing what they do.
Well, I think the most iconic one would really be the one that kind of started, you know, the one that people are most familiar for about Sea Shepherd from, which is like the whale wars era in the Southern Ocean. So, you know, Sea Shepherd for a number of years was out in the Southern Ocean protecting whales in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary against illegal whaling that was taking place from Japanese fishing boats. So we battled that one for many, many years. It was well documented. And 2019 marked the first year where no whaling actually occurred in the Southern Whale Ocean Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. Sea Shepherd has opposed Japanese whaling operations in the Southern Ocean since 2002, and through direct action has saved the lives of over 6,000 whales from the harpoons of whalers. Now, despite a global ban on commercial whaling, Japan had slaughtered whales in the Southern Ocean for decades under the pretext of scientific research. The International Court of Justice deemed that this research was non-scientific and, in fact, illegal. So in 2019, Japan announced an end to their Arctic whaling program, and no whales were killed in the Southern Whale Ocean Sanctuary from that point forward. So the whale wars are now officially over and we won. And that's a huge win for our clients.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think I read too that Captain Paul Watson said that now this means also that there's no whaling going on in the Southern Hemisphere at all. That's hugely encouraging.
Indeed. And whales are so important, not only because they're living beings and they're magical and they're mystical and, you know, they're so intelligent. And if you've ever had the privilege of seeing one, it's a life-changing experience. But whales, as is the case with all marine wildlife, play such a critical role in maintaining, again, the health of the oceans and also mitigating climate change. These animals sequester carbon, and in, you know, traveling from the bottom of the ocean up into the top, they do an incredible job of, you know, spreading nutrients throughout the water column. All of this is so important in, you know, mitigating climate change and sequestering carbon. So it really is important that we protect these animals, not only because they are living creatures that deserve to exist peacefully in their natural habitat, but again, it's one of those things that protect the planet. It's in all of our best interests.
Yeah, and the whales contribute to the health of phytoplankton, which are the producers of the oxygen that we breathe. And it's yet another example of this theme that comes up on our show all the time of you cannot separate one piece of the whole. Everything plays a role. Everything is part of the system that we enjoy on this earth. And, you know, to pretend like any one member of the community is not necessary or not vital is not just short-sighted, but dangerous and becoming more and more so.
Absolutely.
So it sounds like several of these examples are due to markets which are possibly illegal. Are there examples where Sea Shepherd is working to protect waters where, you know, consumers throughout the world are sort of indirectly involved as consumers? You know, is there illegal fishing going on that makes its way into a market that, you know, we could see take shape in like a Canadian supermarket, an American supermarket, a German supermarket? You know, how should the average consumer listening to this react to how this is impacting choices that they make every day too, as far as the products they buy?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the whole supply chain of like illegal versus legally caught fish is not as well defined as it should be. So is there the possibility that, you know, that a fish that you may purchase in a supermarket in Europe or North America came from illegal fishing activities? The answer is yes, that's a possibility. So really the best that you can do as a consumer, I guess, is to make conscious choices places to reduce the amount of seafood and fish that you eat whenever possible, eliminate it altogether if possible. You know, the fish farming that we see off the coast of British Columbia and Canada and other areas of the world has an enormous impact on, you know, wild caught salmon and local ecosystems. It's often, you know, promoted as a environmentally friendly alternative to eating wild caught fish because these are farmed fish. But the reality is that, you know, it's factory farming, albeit in the ocean and not on land. But these animals are living in incredibly cramped and unhealthy conditions. Disease is rife, parasites, illness, and all of that waste product and all of that disease spills out into the ocean ecosystems, which has an impact on wild animals as well, too. So truly, I mean, if at all possible, avoid and reduce the consumption of marine wildlife. It's the best possible thing you can do for your health and also for the health of the oceans.
What is your dog's name?
My dog's name is Tinka. I'm sorry about the barking.
Tinka. No, it's okay. Sounds like she agrees. That's all I was going to say. So
I found her when she was a puppy in Mexico and I kind of just took her. So had her for a few years now.
She's lucky.
She's a good girl. Yeah. You know, the ocean has an incredible ability to heal if we just let it rest. But, you know, the scope and the magnitude of the overfishing that's happening right now is really stretching and stressing populations to the absolute limit. They can recover. They can come back. They can bounce back and we'll all be better for it if we can just alleviate some of that pressure. So as consumers, we have enormous power with the, you know, with the purchases that we choose to make and the purchases that we choose not to make.
Yeah, it seems like there's almost no good way to provide seafood to the world at the level at which it's demanded, you know, these days. So it really is about reducing or eliminating your consumption of these living beings, because there's really no good way to do it anymore. Not in this world, not with the mindset of industrial farming applied to the oceans. And you can't really get some shrimp in a restaurant or some sushi in, you know, Denver without enormous cost to our ecosystems and the health of our planet as a result, I think. At least that's my sense after watching these stories play out so often over the last 10 years or so. You know, you really just can't ignore it once you've seen it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it goes a step beyond that as well, too. We're facing a time now where our planet is under enormous stress. You know, we're starting to see stories about, you know, climate change unfold on the regular. And, you know, like the planet is struggling right now. And we call our planet Earth, but it really is planet ocean. So over 70% of the Earth's surface is covered with water. You know, if you take a breath, take a second breath, one of those two breaths just came to you courtesy of the ocean. Over 50%, 50 to 80% of the oxygen that we breathe is provided from the ocean. And this has everything to do with that delicate balance of an oceanic ecosystem that I had mentioned earlier. It's the life in the ocean and the interaction of life forms within the ocean that ultimately produces the oxygen that we breathe and also serves as a carbon sink to help mitigate the impact of climate change. So a healthy ocean is absolutely essential for a healthy planet. And we really cannot talk about, you know, environmentalism or climate change or any of these things without bringing in, you know, the ocean. 70% of our planet is water, and that has to be healthy for the planet to be healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like people might say, oh, why does the vaquita matter? Why do sharks off of the coast of Western Africa matter? Well, it's part of the larger picture of the health of the oceans. One species being unhealthy is a symptom of an ecosystem being unhealthy, which is a symptom of the Earth in pockets and now more and more throughout the planet becoming unhealthy. And, you know, we have to have this holistic perspective, even while we work on the micro level, very close in local communities to make change where we can and how we can, I think.
We all have a role to play, essentially, in helping to protect the ocean. So collaboration is a big part of what we're doing these days. Many of our scientific partnerships as well, too. Our scientific campaigns are in partnership and really just elevating and enhancing the efforts of conservation researchers around the world. So this is absolutely important. As I mentioned earlier, the oceans can recover if we give them the opportunity to heal. So it really is a collaborative effort between governments, between activists, between individuals, between scientists, to, with our respective lenses, work together to actually generate a solution that ultimately works in a manner that makes sense for the way that marine wildlife actually behaves.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And something you were speaking about earlier, I think, is important to call out as far as globally, some of these illegal fishing vessels are violating national boundaries too, and taking away from, I assume, local farmers who may depend on the health of ecosystems for food sources to sustain their families. And would you speak maybe just a little bit more about some of the partnerships that have taken shape with governments in, you know, South America, Mexico and Central America, North America, and then also Western Africa?
So yeah, absolutely. You've made an excellent point there. And we definitely do see that this illegal fishing, not only is it devastating to the environment, but it also has very real human impacts as well, too, for local economies, local communities. Sea Shepherd works collaboratively with governments around the world, including governments in Liberia, Namibia, Sao Tome and Principe, the Gambia, Benin, Gabon, Sierra Leone, Mexico, Peru, Panama, and discussions are currently underway to work build up additional government partnerships as well. I can certainly tell you from having spent many years on Milagro, for example, in Mexico, that the Vaquita Refuge is really just off the shore of a small fishing village. This is historically a fishing village where local artisanal fishermen, you know, catch their fish and feed their families as they've done for many generations. And, when the black market came into town and the cartel came into town and people started fishing for Totoaba swim bladders, you know, this has a devastating impact, as you can imagine, for local communities and families, as well as, you know, what it's doing to the vaquita. That I think it's worth mentioning that in this particular instance, the poachers that we are opposing here are not the local fishermen. We do not oppose the local efforts by artisanal fishermen. They're also victims of this whole situation. And I mean, it's a tough situation to solve, but a healthy ocean will also enhance the health of local artisanal fishing communities as well, too. So I think it's, well-intentioned efforts. So like shrimp embargoes against the fishing that's going on, you know, in the Upper Gulf of California penalizes local legal shrimp fishermen and forces them out of the waters, which in turn leaves the waters wide open for the cartel. So it's harming people that are potentially allies to help protect this region, who have, you know, a vested effort in protecting this region, that are not necessarily the same ones that are responsible for poaching and killing the Totoaba and the Vaquita.
Yeah, such a good point. You know, you just reminded me of a question I wanted to ask earlier. You mentioned the cartel in Mexico is one example. I would imagine that some of these other illegal fishing vessels are, you know, not the friendliest folks. So is there risk involved for Sea Shepherd vessels? And, you know, has Sea Shepherd had to understand how to protect itself as well in this work, as it really is kind of a vigilante operation in some ways, or at least historically has been?
There's certainly risk involved. I mean, the stakes are high, and it's been well documented, and, you know, in some of the films that are out there that feature our work. But there's big money and a lot at stake for the people that oppose what we're doing out there. We are not armed. You know, we are merely defending ourselves out there. But, you know, like from our early days on Operation Milagro, where we had a single sailboat out there, it's evolved into something a little bit more than that. There's no shortage of footage out there that shows our ships getting attacked. Poachers have swarmed our ships. They've launched Molotov cocktails at us. They've shot at us. They've set our ships on fire. They've illegally boarded our ship. So we do have defensive measures in place to ensure the safety of our volunteers and our crew on board. It can be dangerous out there at times.
If you'd be willing, I'd love to hear you speak a little bit about sort of what you've seen out there as far as what you think of as the best of humanity and the worst of humanity. You know, what's sort of something inspiring and beautiful that comes to mind for you? And then also maybe what's something that was really hard to take in?
Well, it's interesting and it's a bit emotional for me because the two are so closely interconnected. I think experiencing the best and the worst of humanity at the same time is somewhat commonplace to me, and it's complicated to work through emotionally. I can tell you in Japan, when I was in Taiji, for example, there really aren't any words to describe what it's like to watch the systematic slaughter of multi-generational families of highly intelligent cetaceans, objectively animals that are more intelligent than us, even by our own stacked deck definition of intelligence. Their brains are so much more evolved than us, and the horror and the atrocity that they experience and that, you know, that I witnessed there is just, we've seen The Cove, we've seen it in Seaspiracy, and these documentaries did an excellent job of shedding light on this atrocity that's still underway, but it's not the same as being there, I can tell you that. And without getting too graphic, I'll get graphic, but I mean, you can hear them screaming, you can smell the blood in the water. This is all so senseless, you know. You watch them like trying to jump up on the rocks just to end their own suffering and getting thrown back down, and you know, like it's kind of indescribable and overwhelming for a lot of people. And at the same time, you've got people there, you know, from all around the world who are voluntarily witnessing this and sharing this with the world. And not only people like myself, you know, North Americans, but what was really inspiring to me are the incredibly courageous Japanese activists who have so much more at stake by being there and documenting this and you know, potentially working with us than we could ever really understand. As an incredible amount of selflessness and courage, and it's incredibly commendable. So, you know, on one hand, you see these dead-eyed, you know, like fishermen going out and just committing the most horrible atrocities, you know, like killing pods of dolphins, separating babies from their mothers, and kind of having the audacity to look bored while they're doing it. And on the flip side, you've got people on the shores who are risking their lives and their families, you know, well-beings to tell the world about this. So, there's a lot to unpack there. It's heavy, you know, and on the ships, for another example, again, I can tell you, having spent many years out in the upper Gulf of California on Operation Milagro, you know, at times it does feel hopeless when you're pulling in these, you know, like dead animals, so many dead animals, animals that we couldn't save that are bycatch entangled in illegal fishing gear that's placed in the water entirely due to human greed and, you know, unsubstantiated medicinal purposes where, you know, people are, you know, like basically profiting off the extinction of species. That's atrocious and it's appalling. And it becomes a lot to take, you know. It's very difficult. And then I look around me at the amazing group of crew members, you know, colleagues on the shores and on the ships that are working with me, largely volunteers, you know, from all walks of life, all around the world, who are here fighting this fight. I'm incredibly inspired by them. And I'm just reminded that, you know, there are people out there that care deeply and that are fighting for a better world. I'll tell you just as a sort of like side example on that, one of the little initiatives we've been doing in preparation for World Oceans Day at Sea Shepherd is we just did a little coloring contest for kids, asked them to submit drawings of their favorite marine life and for a chance to win a prize. And we were reviewing all of the entries, and it's remarkable to me that I'm seeing, you know, little kids in Europe who are sending us pictures of vaquitas and gillnets and totoabas. And I'm like, that's us, you know, like this is like a child in a small town in Hungary who knows about the plight of the totoaba and the vaquita because we put that story out there. And I think that's to be commended. And that kid may play an integral role in actually solving this problem in the future. So
yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. Perfect. Well, I think the last thing I'd like to ask today, Tamara, is just what have you learned as far as the importance of
getting involved and taking a stand from working with Sea Shepherd. I think Sea Shepherd is such a clear example of people saying, we must do something here. And so we're going to do it, and we're going to do whatever it takes while still respecting the safety of other human beings and the international law that protects us all from a common sense sort of perspective. But Sea Shepherd really does everything they can to make a difference. And I'd love to hear you just speak about the power of that and your experience of what it feels like to truly take a stand and what we can all learn from what you've experienced in that sense.
I think what I've learned ultimately is that there's the power of the individual to truly make a difference. And in fact, as I mentioned earlier, that in the end is probably one of the only things that actually does make a difference, is a small group of committed, passionate individuals working towards something that they truly do believe in. Every one of us has the capacity to bring forth change. Every one of us, the people that are out there on the front lines, the people that you saw in Whale Wars, the people that you saw in Seaspiracy, these are people, you know, they're just like you or me, people who've made a choice to get out there and make a difference. And as small or as large as that choice can be, it's better than the alternative of doing nothing, because nothing will change if nothing ever happens, right? So I think any contribution, no matter how great or small, is commendable and honorable and is worthwhile. So yes, sometimes it requires a bit of sacrifice. Sometimes, you know, you may look at this and say, I can't volunteer to be on the ships for 3 months. I've got, you know, whatever, school, or I've got a mortgage or whatever. You know, not everybody can. I appreciate that. But there's plenty of things you can do locally within your own community to get involved and to help. You can contribute financially to these causes if you're in a means where you're able to do that. You know, we are entirely based on donations. We're a nonprofit organization, so all donations are greatly appreciated. You know, get involved in whatever capacity you can. It really does matter. And in fact, at the end of the day, perhaps it's the only thing that does matter, right? It's really trying to leave the world a little bit better of a place than how we found it.
Yeah. And I saw a quote recently from Captain Watson, actually, of Sea Shepherd, where he said, you know, it's no longer about even being optimistic. It's not about if the activists win. It's about, you know, are we going to do what it takes to save humanity, essentially? Not, of course, the wildlife, of course, nature, of course, all the beautiful life on this planet, but are we willing to do what it takes to save ourselves? And, you know, every choice someone makes to do something that preserves and protects life is in that camp, is growing that version of the world. It's changing the story so that we're no longer hopeless or doomed or inevitably self-destructive. It's like, no, if every single person who makes a small choice, a large choice, any choice to preserve and protect life is part of the answer to that, is part of the solution. And
absolutely. And it's part of the collective consciousness too. Every action that you put out there, as large or small as it might be, somebody's watching it, you know, some kid somewhere might be listening to your podcast, Nathan, and that might give them the courage or the push that they need to go off and do something that neither you or I could even have conceptualized, but maybe, you know, the solution moving forward. So I think, you know, by setting a good example for our fellow men and, you know, extending a hand and leading the way, together we can all make this world a better place.
Yeah, it goes back to that point of we're all connected and we all have different roles to play, just like nature does. Every being has its own role to play. So do we as humans, you know, in our way. Perfect. Well, thanks again, Tamara. This was really wonderful speaking with you, and such a privilege to hear about your individual experiences and to learn more about Sea Shepherd.
Truly a pleasure. Thank you so much, Nathan.
I'm so glad Tamara spoke about the amazing accomplishment of Sea Shepherd in the Southern Atlantic near Antarctica, which is a victory for the entire Southern Hemisphere. Sea Shepherd prevented Japanese whaling vessels from continuing to operate in the dark, without accountability, without transparency, without having to answer to the international community for the deceit that they were using to cover up the capture and murder of whales, which they said was research. Sea Shepherd refused to allow the Japanese vessels to operate in the dark, and that was enough. They didn't have to stop them completely on their own, and they didn't have to find ways to force them legally or politically to stop. They just had to be there, to be the eyes for the world, to get in the way of these operations physically so that attention was called to the situation, and so that the pressure from a public relations standpoint was so large that it was enough to put a stop to it for the Japanese organizations who were involved. This illustrates a point we've explored this year a few times with other guests, that visibility is one of the most important tools we have to protect our planet and ourselves. Corporations are terrified that the global population will find out what's going on behind closed doors, behind the four walls of an industrial farming facility, behind the closed doors of a boardroom, in the remote forests that are being destroyed, or out at sea where nobody's watching. The greatest power these organizations have when it comes to continuing their exploitation of people and planet is based on deceit and secrecy, which means that our greatest tools in stopping them are truth and transparency. We must make a point to support organizations like Sea Shepherd and so many other nonprofits and NGOs around the world who are focused on shining a light on those who are operating in the dark, who are doing the work of uncovering the truth and sharing it fearlessly with the world, despite often personal cost. Because when the truth is known, so much can change, and quickly. All that power, all that money, all that influence can't cause people to forget what they now know once they know it. And that is massively powerful. Which takes us to our three takeaways for today's episode, what we call our three changemakers. Changemaker number one, we are more powerful than we realize. The Sea Shepherd organization is made up of a small community of people, but look at what they've been able to accomplish on the global stage. They have affected the behavior of massive and powerful governments and interests with endless resources, like the government of Japan, the industries of Japan. There are very obvious limits to the true influence of money and secrecy when we see stories like this. These interests, which seem so powerful, fall apart very quickly when truth, humanity, and accountability enter the picture. Humanity in the sense of compassion and acknowledging of what's best for us and other living things. Typically, at any time, there are roughly 100 to 120 individual volunteers working out at sea on Sea Shepherd vessels. That's around the entire planet. This fleet of vessels that numbers in the single digits is standing between massive political and financial interests and protecting marine life on a huge scale. Imagine what Sea Shepherd could do with 100 vessels, 10 times the amount they have now, which isn't very many when we remember that the commercial fishing industry has about 5 million vessels around the world's oceans. It's so easy to look at the problems of the world and feel small and insignificant or helpless due to the sheer scale of what's going on. But when we step up and do something about it and find ways to appeal to the hearts and minds of others around the world, we are powerful. More powerful than we ever would have guessed. I think what Tamara said during our conversation is so true. When people understand the problem and what to do to solve it, when it becomes real to them, they'll often choose to protect and preserve life. If enough of us stand up to these global interests, who are taking advantage of our ignorance and our hopelessness, and then share the truth of what they're doing with others, this world can transform so quickly. We've got to do what we can to tell and share these stories. Which brings us to changemaker number two. When we take a stand, we can transform the world. And if we don't take a stand, we will lose the world as we know it. Remember when Tamara answered the question about why organizations like Sea Shepherd are necessary? She responded by asking, why are activists ever necessary? Women's rights, civil rights, LGBTQ+ rights, none of these were handed to the groups who fought for them. All of the progress that was made to liberate and build equality for every marginalized group of non-white, non-male, non-heterosexual peoples came from communities that stood together and stood up to power demanding change. And each of these communities changed the world for themselves and for all of us who came after. When we take a stand as Sea Shepherd is doing, as so many other conservation-focused organizations and communities are doing, we can transform the world for the better. The difference with this topic is that if we don't take a stand for the Earth and for our oceans, we will lose our way of life. Forever. If we lose the balance of the ocean's ecosystems because we've harvested trillions of fish every year until they can no longer replenish themselves, causing the deaths of countless other ocean creatures, then the oceans begin to die, and we lose the source of half of our oxygen. This is the reality of our time. If we continue to ignore the truth that consuming animals at the volumes that we currently do is destroying our Earth, and our ability to inhabit it, then we will lose it, and we won't get a do-over, which is why it's so important to take action that lines up with the truth of our situation. We must make a stand, or forever regret that we didn't. Which takes us to changemaker number 3. We must take our hope and make it active. Organizations like Sea Shepherd give me hope. It's so encouraging to know that there are groups of people out there putting their lives on hold and their safety at risk to protect the most precious resources on our planet on behalf of all of us. But without my taking my own action, that hope goes no further. The hope that grew out of me seeing Sea Shepherd in action kind of dies on the vine. I need to do what I can do to support organizations like Sea Shepherd and what they stand for, and then also become a conduit for change in whatever way I can, whatever way we can. And we may not change the world overnight, of course. We need more and more voices in this conversation to really turn the tide if we're going to make and see meaningful change. But we don't get involved and make our individual stand to get immediate results. We do it because it keeps that hope alive and gives life to the solutions that are available to us to keep us going, to keep us moving. As I was reading about Sea Shepherd to prepare today's episode, I came across a story that Captain Paul Watson, Sea Shepherd's founder, told during an interview. A story about a defining moment in his life and in his work as a protector and advocate for the Earth. Captain Watson spent time at Wounded Knee in South Dakota during the 1973 occupation of that location, which is the same place where the 1890 massacre happened, where almost 300 Lakota Native Americans, including men, women, and children, were killed by the United States Army. If you aren't familiar with either the massacre of 1890 or the 1973 occupation, I would definitely encourage you to spend a moment looking it up online. There's this huge piece of American history when it comes to Native American relations that none of us have heard about in school, and we need to. We need to be talking about it. In 1973, the United States Marshal Service, the FBI, and local law enforcement opened fire on the occupiers of Wounded Knee, who were mostly Native Americans, and their supporters during this action, which lasted for 71 days. Captain Watson was serving as a medic for the American Indian Movement, or AIM, which is an organization that was sponsoring a lot of the action. Captain Watson has shared in interviews what he observed as far as the Lakota mindset when it came to this occupation and other acts of resistance and civil disobedience that the Native Americans were carrying out. This is a quote from Captain Watson describing what he observed in the Lakota. "You don't do what you do and worry about whether you're going to win or lose. You do what you do because it's the right thing to do, and therefore it is the only thing to do. You can't be concerned about the results. You can't be concerned about the odds against you. You just do what you have to do." The interviewer had asked Captain Watson if he gets hopeless or discouraged about the success or failure of global activism. And his response was, "It's not important if activists win or lose. It's important whether the human species survives or not." We must take action. We must find reasons to believe in what we stand for and let that be enough. Because there will be big challenges and there will be disappointing outcomes, but we've got to keep going. We may begin to lose precious species forever, both on land and at sea, if we don't change soon. We must continue to stand anyway. We may not see the mainstream adopt these stories and inspire people to become more aware, to take action. We, who have chosen to do so, must continue to stand anyway. We may not see people make the connection that consuming animals is destroying our planet, and we may lose crucial ecosystems in the process. We must continue to stand anyway, and to do our best to make people aware of the choice that they have to benefit the planet. We cannot control the outcomes, the beliefs or behaviors of others, but we can do what must be done because it preserves our ability to live as we do now, and that can be enough for us. We must make our hope active. We must take action. It's not about winning or even being right or justified in the eyes of others. It's about doing what we have to do. We don't take action to win quickly or show off. We do it because it's the right thing to do, and we must do all we can so that if nothing else, we can get to the end of our lives and say, "I did my best. I did what I could to protect what I cared about. Here's what you can do on these topics today. There's so much we can do, but there's one single choice I want to focus on because it's the most powerful thing that any of us can do right now, today, to make a difference. There's a simple truth that we can choose to acknowledge or not. We are eating the oceans to death. And if the oceans die, our planet as we know it will no longer exist. And life on Earth will become very difficult, possibly deadly, to any who are here. That could be within a couple generations. The simple truth is, if we want to see our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren enjoy a stable Earth, which supports life as abundantly as it does now, we've got to stop eating so much seafood. It may be an uncomfortable truth for some of us, but it's still a truth. It's a similar choice as far as, okay, I have a very high risk of lung cancer, maybe, so I can smoke or not smoke. The choice is up to me. Nobody can force me to do it, and it's really nobody else's business, necessarily. But when I'm smoking, the people around me are breathing it in as well, which is not good for them, and it's certainly putting my health at risk in the long term. If we feel that we would choose not to smoke in that circumstance, what keeps us from no longer eating seafood? Our long-term health is at stake. If we drive down global demand and signal to fishing corporations that they no longer have such a massive market to exploit and serve, then we can allow the oceans to restore themselves, for life to thrive again, and then maybe in 50 years we can start eating more seafood again or something, if many of us choose to do so. But we don't need to be healthy, and the oceans need a rest. We heard Tamara speak about the beauty and vitality in the marine protected areas that she's been lucky enough to dive in. Her words were, "It's what the ocean was meant to be." We have to give the ocean ecosystems we're jeopardizing a chance to rebound. Fish-free Fridays, for example, is not enough for this. If you must eat seafood, do so maybe once a week at most, or once a month, or once a year, or make the choice to stop consuming it altogether. It's gotta be more meaningful than just a small break at this point, I think. And as we addressed briefly before our interview, and as we also discussed last year with our guest Keegan Coon, co-director of the Netflix documentary Cowspiracy, this extends to all animal products. It's not just seafood. 40% of the fish we take out of the ocean are fed to land animals that we're raising for human consumption. So consuming animals in any form is part of this conversation. Here's some good news. This is healthy for us. We know now that there are thousands upon thousands of vegan and vegetarian athletes, celebrities, influencers, writers who've shown us, who are living proof that eating a primarily or fully plant-based diet is perfectly healthy and in many cases more healthy than a diet high in animal products. That myth that we need meat or eggs or dairy to be healthy is kind of busted at this point. And pioneering doctors and researchers have shown us that it is very healthy to eat this way to reverse heart disease, diabetes, obesity, and so many other chronic conditions. Personally, I've been vegan for 12 years, with the exception of maybe 10 meals or so early on when I was transitioning that weren't vegan. I've had my nutritional levels tested regularly over the last 12 years, and I've been told by every doctor that they wish that every patient had the vitamin and mineral levels that I had in my blood. So what's good for the planet is also good for us. If you're not convinced about the power of making this choice or about the information around the health of it, there are a lot of resources out there for you. There are dozens of documentaries that focus on this topic. Cowspiracy, of course, is one. Seaspiracy is another that we've mentioned on this episode. Forks Over Knives, Food Inc., Eating Animals, based on the book by author Jonathan Safran Foer, Earthlings, Dominion. These will all give you a sense of what's going on with the industry farming of animals for consumption and what that's causing on the earth, and also the health benefits of choosing a plant-based diet, both for the health of the planet and also for the health of our bodies. What the Health, also on Netflix and created by Keegan and Kip, who created Cowspiracy, is a fantastic documentary if you really want to know more about the health implications of eating an animal product-free diet. And if you'd like to dive deeper into the health of our oceans, what's going on out there, and what we can do to be part of the solution, here are a few other really great documentaries to get you inspired. Check out Mission Blue, featuring prominent scientist and passionate ocean protector, Dr. Sylvia Earle, all about her fight to protect our oceans with marine protected areas. You can learn more about Sea Shepherd and their work by watching Watson, about Captain Paul Watson, or Defend, Conserve, Protect, which is rentable on Amazon Prime. Blackfish is a chilling but really powerful documentary about the downsides of animal entertainment and trading in animals like orcas and dolphins amongst organizations like SeaWorld and others. And The Cove is another which gets into even more detail about the Japanese dolphin run in Taiji, which takes place, unfortunately, on a regular basis and feeds the animal entertainment industry as well as other industries. There's so much information available if you're curious about transitioning to a plant-based diet, what that means for you and for the planet, and how to do it in a way that's sustainable and satisfying and delicious for you. And if I can ever be a resource, email us, podcast@wecanremaketheworld. I'll talk to any of you about my choice and how I made that transition and what I believe it's done for me and what I know it's done for the planet. Our challenge for today, which we do during every episode, we're calling the Earth Warrior Challenge. Inspired by Sea Shepherd, because they are nothing if not Earth Warriors, make a choice to alter your behaviors in some way that benefits the Earth. And stick to it. Make it a long-term choice. If you eat seafood or animal products of any kind, you can choose to remove them from your diet completely or partially if you need a transition period. If you use disposable products that could easily be replaced by reusables of some kind, plastics or paper products, make a commitment to replace that disposable product indefinitely with reusable options. Don't ever go back to the disposables. To prevent further waste from entering our soils and our oceans at a critical time. If you have the choice between car, train, bus, or plane travel, choose train or bus or bike every time for as long as you can sustain it. Or build volunteering with an Earth-focused organization into your routine, into your monthly schedule, your weekly schedule, something that's consistent. Choose something that you know will have a powerful impact on the health of the Earth, and take action that you can sustain, and tell other people about the choice you've made, why you've made it. Do your best to inspire them, or at least inform them. The more of us who become Earth Warriors, the more conversations like the one we just had with Tamara will take place around the world. And soon we could be speaking about the amazing miracle that we brought about in saving our oceans from disastrous results and a total collapse in ecosystems. It's time now to do what must be done because it's the right thing to do, no matter how hopeless it feels or seems at times. We cannot change the world if we don't first change ourselves. So that's our challenge to you. If you'd like to learn more about Sea Shepherd, and there's a lot of amazing stuff that we couldn't cover during this episode, visit seashepherd.org to catch up on the latest campaigns and their progress, to watch short films created by the crews on Sea Shepherd vessels, which invite you into the current campaigns and shows you a glimpse into what's going on out there on the oceans, to connect with their offices around the globe, and also to better understand how you can be part of saving our oceans and protecting marine wildlife from overfishing and the collapse of ecosystems. There's also a great FAQ page at seashepherd.org if you're curious about volunteering on a Sea Shepherd vessel, which is usually a minimum of 2 to 3 months. You can also learn about volunteering opportunities that don't require you to travel or serve on board. You can also, of course, donate, if that's the simplest and most practical way for you to support the organization and their mission of defending, conserving, and protecting global marine life, and therefore, all life. As always, we'll post all of these links on the Sea Shepherd episode page at wecanremaketheworld.com, where we also post links to all of the data, studies, and research that we reference during every episode. We don't throw these numbers out lightly. We trace back to the source every time. There's a lot for you to dig into for today's episode, so definitely check us out at our online home. Thanks, as always, for making time for us and making time for this conversation. To learn more about our guest today and to learn more about what's going on around planet Earth, why we should care, and what we can do to change the story into one of hope, purpose, and a more positive long-term path. If you enjoyed today's episode, if you learned something from it, or if it inspired you or shocked you into a new way of seeing the world, please share it with others. Help us to grow this conversation that we're inviting you to be part of. a crucial conversation about who we want to be in the world and how we want to be in the world and what we can do to work together to reflect the world that we want to see. Give us a rating and a review on whatever platform you're listening on, which also helps the platforms to share our show and spread this message. I want to leave you today with a reminder that nothing is impossible. No matter how huge our problems seem, the things we can do to turn them around are powerful, even if they seem small at first. Japanese whaling vessels were ignoring international law against whaling for years before Sea Shepherd began to intervene in the southern Atlantic Ocean. With persistence from Sea Shepherd and growing global awareness of the fight that they had taken on, whale operations in the southern half of our entire planet have been effectively halted. Our guests, and especially the ones from this year, it seems like, are all examples of how powerful we can be as individuals and as communities, both locally and globally. Don't lose heart. Don't lose hope. Commit yourself every day to doing what you can do, to take a stand for what you feel is the right thing. Nothing is impossible if we commit ourselves to each other, and if we do everything in our power to make change. Truly, nothing. Until next time.
Every one of us has the capacity to bring forth change. Every one of us. The problem seems enormous and overwhelming, and it totally is, but if everybody just takes one step in the right direction, we all have enormous power to truly change the outcome of these stories.